You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 474.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Station and part 6 of this 7-part series recorded during the 2018 TGO Challenge. This podcast covers day 10, 11 and 12 and sees our little band of BLT, that's Bob, Lee and Tony, plus Heather Elston and an occasional challenger and hitchhiker Anna as we leave Braemar, experience some strange weather and odd sleep patterns before eventually arriving at Tarfside, the beginning of East Coast civilization as we know it, after 2 weeks in the hills.
Good morning. Well, it's 20 past six, and as you can hear, the weather has definitely changed. There was rain during the night, not very much, but the tent is wet, and as you can hear, the wind has been swirling and whooshing all around us, and it's probably been going on for a good few hours, so the weather has definitely changed. Even though the forecast was for similar weather to yesterday, it doesn't appear like it's going to be. It's just going to make things interesting going over the top of Jocks Road. But I just thought I'd record this piece so you can hear sometimes how different things can be. The tent is only moving slightly, thankfully, because where we're pitched is beneath the trees and protected from most of the wind. But I'm looking through the top of the vented door at the moment, I can see the trees are really moving, so it could provide some entertainment today. I had a great night's sleep actually, bizarre really, but there you go. I had a good evening last night in Braemar, and then stopped for a chat with Heather, she's camped next to me at the moment, and then crawled into bed at, I don't know, 9-ish, something like that I think. And I've slept like a log, it's fantastic. So I feel much fresher this morning than I have for a few days, even though the conditions are completely different. So the plan this morning is a lazy start, as it's not very far we've got to go, and go into Braemar for breakfast. And once we've had some breakfast, head out, probably 9-ish, up to La Caleta, and start the day. But in the meantime, I'm just going to make sure nothing blows away around the perimeter of the tent.
Two o'clock, and this morning has been interesting. We left the campsite and went to the cafe, Graham's Cafe I think it was, in Braemar. Had a lovely healthy breakfast there, or semi-healthy breakfast there, for a very good value, £10 a head. That was lovely. And popped into the co-op next door, picked up some provisions for the next couple of days. I picked up some sandwiches and some apples and a few nibbles, and Heather did the same. Then we met up with the boys at the hotel, and I think we probably sauntered out of Braemar around 10-ish, something like that, 10 after 10. As we walked up the main road, or the path, and then the main road, and got to La Caleta's road, Glen Clover, we started towards La Caleta Lodge, and as you can tell, there is a wind, which none of us anticipated. So it was a headwind all the way to La Caleta Lodge, met there by Bill, and had a lovely cup of tea, and a lot of chat, and a lot of reminiscing, and Bill remembered Heather and Lee and Tony and myself as one of many challengers that pass through. Some stay, some linger, some have a cup of tea and pass on like we did. But we continued anyway, And as we continued along the glen, the wind really did seem to pick up. And our plan was to camp originally on the other side of Jock's Road over the top. But we were warned by one of the vetters, who we happened to meet actually in the cafe, that it was very boggy over there, and he was a bit suspicious whether there would be enough camping spots for, as it turns out, five tents. So we decided, as we've camped at the end of Lochalater before, to do that, which is a lovely place to camp, very, very nice, dead flat. However, of course, as we got there, the wind was gusting enough for us to realise that there's no way we could camp there safely. However, right at the end of the glen, as the path starts to rise and go up Jock's Road, there are little gullies and re-entrants, and the curve of the stream has carved various plateau areas, if you like, around the stream itself. And so we tucked ourselves basically at the base of the foot of the climb. And although you can hear what's happening to the tent now, we are out of the wind as much as possible. The forecast is supposed to be getting brighter this afternoon. In fact, the sky has got brighter, but the wind has maintained, so I'm hoping that's going to drop off. Not the best camping spots, but we've all somehow managed to find a spot. And mine being the biggest footprint has been the hardest one, so I'm sulking a bit, really, having struggled to find what I'd class as not even a half-decent spot. So I'm sort of on a lumpy ground with heather and rocks and molehills and whatever to contend with. However, it is now time to sit back and just sort of relax a bit. I might read one of my books, I suppose, but only when I'm convinced the tent is holding okay. The reason for my concern, the ground is covered in molehills and heather and peat and moss, and consequently the pegs are not gripping as well as I would like them to. The V pegs have gone in okay, they seem fairly stable, but the slender pegs, I had to push them right down. I'm a little concerned that the worrying of the wind on the material is going to pull some of the pegs out, so I'm keeping an eye on those at the moment before I sort of unpack. But I don't really have much choice. In fact, I've walked around the area for the best part of an hour trying to find something that would be convenient for this footprint, and unfortunately, as I say, it's just a bit on the large side. Had I got one of my nice little one-man, two-man tents, it would have been fine, but unfortunately circumstances have worked against us. But it's a real shame, because the lovely flat area where we'd pitched a couple of years ago would have been fabulous. So it's time for some munchies and to work out what I'm going to do for the rest of the afternoon, really.
Four o'clock, update on our camp situation, or on my camp situation. It's the most bizarre weather. It is absolutely roasting in the direct sunshine, really, really intense. And then we have these incredibly strong gusts of wind that are coming down the glen and bashing the tents, basically. Unfortunately, this hex-shaped F6 tent, although I've pitched it, I can't get it taut because of the lay of the land and the heather and the clumps and the rise and etc, etc. So I'm in the situation where I've pegged it out as best I can. I've got the V-pegs all facing towards the wind, holding the guys and the end of the tent. And you may hear one, I think another one's coming now. Almost. And then all of a sudden you get these gushes of wind, and the tent is supported by walking poles with one of the missing link solid aluminium linking sections, and the pole is incredibly strong. However, it's still worrying when you see it flex by in the middle by in the region of 6 inches or so. It's a bit of a shock, so I'm sort of dozing here with my leg resting against the pole so it doesn't flex too much. But it's really, really bizarre. So I can't open the door to let more air through, and there we go, and the heat out, because the material at the bottom of the door is obviously keeping some of the tension and integrity and holding the base of the tent together when this intense pressure is suddenly placed along one side. But while all this is going on, as I say, it's glorious sunshine. It's really, really hot.
So we're all lying in our shelters, sort of holding on to things, sort of dozing 1 minute and then grabbing hold of the anchoring points the next. So the weather has got better as regards the sun and the cloud base, but the wind has maintained its ferocity. It's the lack of frequency. It's ridiculous. So it's very hard to sort of cook anything or prepare anything when you're sort of holding onto poles and waiting for the next gust to come. Such are the joys, but it is nice to have stopped at 2 o'clock and relax a bit. Although, I wouldn't necessarily call this relaxing sometimes. Lee and Tony have both got tarp tent notches, which have got a much smaller footprint, and they've angled theirs so the wind comes past the end of the shelters, and they actually seem really stable. They've managed to get their material taut. She's got a Force 10 tent, and with the tail into the wind, and that seems to be okay. She's actually down in a dip. And then Anna, who isn't on the TGO but is a hitchhiker, if you like, she's got an MSR, which is also tail into the wind, down by Heather. So I'm the only one really who can't quite get my material taut, which is, as you can imagine, quite frustrating. Seven:40, quick update. It died off a bit earlier on, but as you can hear, it's sort of back now, not so much with a vengeance, but just back on a irregular basis. Still grabbing hold of the pole occasionally because it just seems vulnerable, but to be fair, as I say, the pole is extremely strong. It's just nerves, I guess, really. So I had something to eat and just decided now to bed down for the night. 7:40, we're planning to get off tomorrow at 8 o'clock, if not any earlier, and hopefully keep our fingers crossed that the weather will improve tomorrow in some format and it's not a battle into this headwind. We've got about 20k to do tomorrow to end up where we want to end up, to camp, but that might involve a couple of steep climbs and drops, depending on how Tony wants the route to unfold, to be honest. Anyway, just a quick update. Sky is still bright. I normally blindfold myself with a buff so I can darken everything and get some reasonable sleep. And so, providing these gusts don't go mad during the night, I shall have a little bar of chocolate and a slurp of whiskey and get my head down. And I shall catch you tomorrow. As you can hear, the wind has finally ceased. It continued through to the early hours of the morning, and there was a bit of rain at some stage, but by that stage I'd fallen into that sleep of exhaustion, and although I'm lying right next to the pole, a few times I sort of sat up and checked everything was still pegged down, but just rolled over and tried to ignore it for most of the night. In actual fact, I haven't had too bad a night's sleep, really, considering the build-up to it. It's more about the apprehension and concern, and then actually in reality it's like, just get on with it. So everything's still pegged down. Been outside for a quick look, and there's actually blue sky coming towards us. The sun slowly creeping down the hillside, probably will reach us in the next half an hour or so. So it's doze time until
get the brew on and get some porridge going and start the day with a bit more enthusiasm and hopefully a bit cheerier today. I was a bit fed up yesterday afternoon. Couldn't quite get the pitch right. The tent not being taut has been frustrating, but you do what you can in these circumstances. Anyway, I survived. That's fine. Monday morning, 5 a.m. A bit more later.
...11 o'clock... and the morning has turned into another fine morning. Did that real killer of a climb up Jocks Road. It's not very long, but it's very steep, and it does get the lungs working in the morning. But we had a reasonable start. Caught the track across the top, and now we finally picked the track up past Loch Esk, where we were going to camp. General consensus is glad that we didn't go there in the end. Fairly open, but not so much that. It looked pretty boggy all round, and there didn't look to be any little dips or culverts that would have been out of the wind that weren't peat bog. So it was a good choice last night, even though it was a bit awkward at times, but always best to be on the safe side, particularly in that sort of wind. We would have taken your breath away trying to do Jocks Road with that as well. So it's a cool breeze this morning. Clouds, few clouds in the sky, but sunny, not intensely hot, just warm. So really perfect walking conditions. Everybody in fairly good spirits. Got an interesting route lined up today. It looks like we're heading towards the track that would take us to Sheila na Mark, but we're not going to Sheila na Mark. So I have a feeling that Tony's got some magical ridge walk or semi-ridge walk that he wants us to take to hopefully get us to one of the re-entrants or the beginning of the river that goes down to Loch Lee, possibly River Lee, I'm not too sure. Which is appropriate when you're walking with Lee, isn't it, really? So, I'm just a few paces ahead of them. As I say, everybody's enjoying the morning, but I think it's going to be a long day. A longish day, even though probably only about 10 or 12k. I have a feeling that some of these unmarked paths may just be either bog hopping or heather bashing, or a mixture of both. But as it's been fairly dry, it's usually relatively easy, just laborious really. So that's my 11 o'clock message. More later. ...4:50 and we're just making our way up the burn to the Sheila na Mark. Been a bit of a change of plans today for various reasons. Tony seems to be coming down with a bad chest flu type symptoms and is struggling. Well, he's not struggling, but he's not comfortable. And to be honest, the rest of us are like, well, we've done it now, really. So we decided to change our route. Had a lovely walk, actually. Had a fantastic walk from end of Jocks Road up the hill towards Loch Esk, past Loch Esk, down into one of the tributaries that run into Clover, up the other side, and picked up the track on the opposite side of Loch Mick down to the information centre. And with the weather being superb, we have had a lovely walk. And it's been really interesting to see Glass Elk Shiel, Loch Mick and Dooloch from high above and the other side. Lovely, lovely view. So we're up the last 3 or 4k towards the Sheelin the Mark. We're not going to camp at the Sheelin. Apparently there's a couple of good spots beforehand in one of the tributaries of the stream I'm walking next to, or the burn rather. And I seem to remember them from years ago. Those were nice spots. So
fingers crossed they're still free. We'll get in there tonight and maybe I'll do one more piece. But otherwise, what started off as a bit of a troublesome evening with the wind has turned into a very pleasant day's walking. Fantastic.
Well, up at six, and we finally arrived at the Sheila and the Mark. Unfortunately, just as the sunny afternoon turned a bit greyer and a bit duller, and a chill dropped in the air, we're all fairly tired, I think. We're all grateful to be crawling onto our sleeping pads and making various meals and brews. But we are nestled next to the burn on a reasonable flat camping spot, and I can actually pitch my tent tort tonight, so I'm really chuffed. Everybody is going to sleep well tonight, I think, and then we're looking forward to wandering down to Tarfside tomorrow. So not much else to report, really. I think I covered most things in the previous recordings. It's been a lovely day's walk. Fantastic to see Loch Mick from the other side. And what started off as a little bit confusing where we were going ended up being the best decision for all of us. We're all more than happy and pleasantly tired. So on that note, I'll pick this up hopefully sometime tomorrow morning. I just thought I'd add something to that. I've just realised now that after this lovely meal I've just had of soup, couscous and tuna, and now a nice big mug of hot chocolate with a splash of whiskey in it, this is my last wild camp of the challenge. Tomorrow night is Tarfside, where everybody gathers on the roadside there, and then North Water Bridge, and that's it. It's all over. And then looking at the date, I realise it's exactly 3 weeks since I left home, having done Sky Trail before I did the TGO. So it's a sudden strange moment of reflection, really, and relaxing here by a babbling brook and everybody slowly falling into different slumbers makes me realise I've had a really good few weeks. Although the first week on Sky, if you listen to that podcast, was dreadful by comparison to the TGO. The TGO has been pretty much marvellous weather. And it's been good. It's been good for the soul. It's been good for enlightenment and getting away from all the usual distractions that you have at home, as well as the curse of social media, which of course is a bit ironic considering I'm using social media to promote this podcast. All the same, it's been nice to meet up with old friends, make some new ones, and lift your head up and see the view. Look back, see where you've come from. Look forward, see where you're going. Look above, watch the weather, and look below and check where your feet are falling. Yeah, it's been good. And on that note, I'm going to have another slurp of whiskey.
This podcast is brought to you by backpackinglight.co.uk, a small UK independent helping you save weight and enjoy outdoor life more.
Oh dear, 5:30. Worst night's sleep of the whole trip. These tufts of grass that are... Oh, well, where I pitched the tents. And when I pitched it, I thought I got it just right so that I could lie in a, almost like in a groove. A groove of tufts, a groove of grass. So I'm relatively flat. But actually, when it came to sleeping last night, even I've got all this space inside this tent, I keep moving the pad around, sleeping mat around, to try and find a relatively flat bit without a big lump in my back or my shoulder or whatever. Unfortunately. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be. That's the most uncomfortable night. Cramp in my legs. Oh, God. I'm just woken now. And my feet were peeping outside the tent, having slid down the slope and gone halfway. So, I see it's rained as well during the night. So, and it was also a bit cold. It wasn't terribly cold. But just my back aches and... Oh, God. Can't wait for Tarfside, where I know the ground is flat. I can get there this afternoon. Probably got to try and get a few hours sleep and catch up. What a night. It's daft. Something so simple can make it so uncomfortable. Oh. 8 o'clock. And we're just packing up the tents, and the weather has changed from that lovely, sunny, warm, walking weather to traditional TGO weather. Cloud is just above us. It is very cold. Hands are absolutely freezing. It rained quite heavily during the night, and the moisture is still in the air. So if there's sort of, is it about to rain in this cloud or is it not type of moment. I see a few of the tents are still by Shilin and Mark. Obviously going to wait their time and see what happens. But we decided to crack on and get warm moving if nothing else. The temperature really has dropped and there's a bitter wind accompanying it as well. But hey, that's the way it goes. One day it's glorious, next day it's not. That's Scotland. And thankfully this is the last but one day anyway, so it's not the end of the world if things are sodden. So I'm just waiting for the guys to finish packing their rucksacks. They're almost done. Heather's just behind us. She's taking the tent down. So we should be on the move in the next 10 minutes, hopefully. And heading up to Muckle Carn. And then from there it's an established track all the way down to Tarfside. But as soon as we get moving, things will improve. But at the moment... blooming freezing.
Oh, 11:15, and things have improved weather-wise. The cloud has lifted. We've dropped down. We found the track after a little bit of a 2 or 3 k yump across to Muckle Carn. Bit of heather bashing, bit of bog bashing. But it wasn't too bad. Got the track, started to drop down, and we were all just saying we've forgotten just how long and laborious this walk can be, wandering in. But we're almost at the edge of Loch Lee now, so take a case of stripping off the insulation layers and getting our head down in anticipation of bacon sandwiches, tea and cake. Seemed to be the order of the day, which are getting bigger and bigger in our imaginations as we keep walking. So, looking forward to that. Nothing else to report really. Seen a few challenges ahead, seen a few challenges behind, but obviously nobody within talking distance, so everybody's dreaming of the same luxury of breakfast waiting for them at the St. Drostan's Hostel. Hello, hello, hello. What a fine smell we have in this establishment. Hello. Just cruising, you know, just cruising around, checking out the views. I would like 2 bacon rolls, please. And a mug of tea.
2?
Yeah. Do it properly. Have you ordered? Okay.
For the duration of the challenge, the church hostel at Tarfside is run by challenge volunteers, either partners of those actually on the challenge itself, or ex-challengers who enjoy the social camaraderie and possibly cooking, as this is where hundreds of bacon sandwiches, gallons of tea, and copious amounts of cake and hot meals are consumed and much appreciated after a two-week diet of freeze-dried mush. When you eventually pull yourself away from this luxury, the sports field at Tarfside Village is open to free camping, and some 100 or so challengers pitch there over a couple of nights. It was here I had the good fortune to meet in person Craig and Vicky Gully from St. Louis, Missouri. They have been long-time supporters of the Outdoor Station for many years, and we soon fell into conversation about the Challenge podcast series and how difficult it used to be for them and others outside of the UK to join in with all the Challenge fun.
Well, it's actually much easier now than it was when I joined it the first time, I think. And that's mostly due to your podcast. Because I really found out about the TGO from the TGO magazine online. But then the reference material that I listened to first was your podcast. And so that was a great repository of information on the crossing. The first time I signed up, it wasn't as easy because you could only get the sign-up sheet in the magazine. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't online yet. Mm-hmm. So I had to order the magazine. You know, they made you order a copy of it in order to pay for a copy.
How long ago was this then?
14 was our first crossing. 14, yeah, 14. So we got a copy of the magazine and then signed up, sent everything in, and then you wait for the lottery. Mm-hmm. And I jokingly think that they give preferential treatment to overseas people because it takes us so long to actually sort it out. But we got in the first year that we applied. So that was 14.
And how did you feel when you applied the first time, Vicky? Were you apprehensive?
Yeah, very apprehensive. I'm not a long distance hiker. I don't have quite the experience that Craig does. But, you know, I'll follow him anywhere as long as he feels like I can do it. And so once he decided, you know, we got excited and I said, let's go for it.
Okay.
We'd already been into Scotland before, okay, and we absolutely loved it. So, yeah. So we loved it. So we had some
sort of familiarity to it.
A little bit of familiarity to it, but we were like, let's go.
Okay. So they said, yes, you're in. So what happens next for you?
Well, the thrill of it was really based on the Scottish right-of-way laws, that it wasn't an established route. It wasn't like a trail you were just going to walk, or a series of trails you could walk. You actually had to create your own route from a starting point to an end point. And that really required maps. And at the time, I actually ordered most of the Ordnance Survey maps from the UK and had them shipped, because there's no real resource for them in the US. That you can't go to a map store and buy, you know, OS maps. But then I discovered Route Buddy, so Neil and his company, which made it much easier because then I could do it on a computer. But you still have problem of not knowing exactly what's on the ground. Right. So, again, you listen to the podcast and you did a great job of describing sort of how wet it is underfoot and what was involved. But you don't really get a sense of that even with Google Earth until you're actually here. Mm-hmm. As we were talking before, there's really no analogy to bogs or heather bashing in the U.S. So trying to pick a route that was both interesting to see, but also not a high route or a real challenging route for Vicky was kind of a compromise between some Range Rover pass, some B roads, and then some wild walking. So
okay, and that was in the first year.
That was in the first year.
Okay, so with the first year's experience under your belt, then did you feel really much more confident when you're playing the next year?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
and I I enjoy some of the social aspects of it also. Mm-hmm. So I like the combination. I love sleeping in a tent and being out with nobody else around. But I also like running into areas where there are other people to visit and talk
And share ideas and experiences and roots and that sort of thing. Yeah.
I pretty much talk to anybody that walks by, and I pet every dog that walks by. So I enjoy that part of it also.
So how does that come across then in your experience of sort of US walking or US socializing, should we say? Because I always try and explain to people this event is extremely unique in the sense that the whole idea of it was to promote fellowship amongst backpackers. Mm-hmm. But does it, from, you know, from an outsider's perspective, from somebody away from the UK coming here, does it do that? Is it different?
I think it's a little bit different. I mean, I think the trail community in the US, you become a community when you're on the trail, right? So especially with the explosion and the plethora of people that are on the AT and the PCT and the CDT and, and other trails or national parks, it doesn't make any difference. There's just been a huge explosion of people in the outdoors in the U.S. And you build that camaraderie based on being there, but it's still dominated. One of the things that I liked about this, again, reading and listening to your podcast, was that it was sort of our age group, right? So even in the U.S., where the age group, even of long distance hikers, may be creeping up a little bit to the mid 30s, and some of the retired but well known ones are now in their 40s, and you can hike it at any age for sure. The long trails, or most of the long trails in the U.S. are dominated by the 20-somethings.
Is it very much like a rite of passage these days? I get the feeling it's like a gap year that they have to go and do a trail.
Yes, the AT specifically is that. So that's the Eastern Coast Trail, the Appalachian Trail, and that's really very close to population centers, and that's really a rite of passage. People get on that trail and try it for many different reasons. Find myself, what's my next step, gap year. The PCT is a little bit more challenging, and you tend to see people that are a little bit more prepared and ready to go on a trail like that. And that trail is actually in some ways easier than the AT because the tread is better, and it stays along the ridgeline. But and then the CDT, of course, is still a route, so it's not finished and a lot more wild. Very similar to what this would be, only longer. But it doesn't have the consistent age demographic that this does. So I mean, the average age of the TGO, I think this year, and it has been sort of every year we've done, is right around 56-57 years old, and you don't see that a mass amount of people walking from point A to point B who average 56 years old, and you look at people who are in their 70s and 80s, you know, who are doing this consistently and well, and it's just,
and they just kill it, you know. I mean, it just, it's fantastic.
It's impressive, isn't it?
It's impressive, and it's just like, you know, and it gives you hope as you get older. It's just like, you know, that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I want to be out here somewhere. Yeah. I still want to be in our tent or in our hammocks or whatever. Yeah. I'm just like, I'm cheering them on.
And they're wonderful sources of information. I mean, the stories they tell and the information they impart is wonderful. So we enjoy their company.
Oh, we love it.
And certainly, I mean, I think Barbara Saunders is the oldest lady this year. I think she's 82.
Yeah.
And she's the one I interviewed years ago. One of the very first people I did, really, and who travels with a hairdryer.
Does she really?
Yeah, she travels with it. But basically, I mean, she doesn't camp. She walks from hostel to hostel or B&B or whatever. But she's still got to do the 200 miles, you know?
Ooh, you go, girl.
And it's just like, hairdryer? I mean, the number of people who listen to that say, you don't really carry a hairdryer. And this does not happen without a hairdryer, you know?
Right. This happens if you don't have a hairdryer, you know?
Yeah. So this year, then, weather has been good. It's your fourth crossing, but I think...
Third crossing.
Yeah. But you had to make a few adjustments for different reasons.
Yeah. I mean, when I adventure with Vicky, it's not really about the hardcore have to make it from A to B. I mean, I have to say that, you know, if I was on my own, it wouldn't be an issue crossing every year. It's not a physical challenge as much as it is a mental challenge for me to plan a route that Vicky can do. But I'm perfectly prepared that if she, for some reason, can't do it physically, you know, we don't get to count it as an official crossing, but it's just as good of an adventure for us. Mm. So if she has to stop for a couple days and I have to stop to join her, or logistics wise, and then we carry on, you know, she's certainly not a quitter. So every year that, you know, she's had a difficulty, and that was in 14, and again this year in 18 for a couple of days, you know, as soon as she's right again or well enough again, we're back on the route wherever we can jump back on. And that's great for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not particularly hung up on the fact that I'm listed with one or two or three crossings. It's a fabulous time. Mm-hmm. The people in Scotland and the scenery and our experience is just, they've been fantastic every single year we've come.
So Vicky, from a female point mm-hmm. of view, then from the US perspective, what would you say to female listeners in the US who might be considering something like this?
I said, you know, go for it, but I just, you know, go light, you know. If you think you need it, think twice, you know. I think the biggest thing I've, you know, seen is take too much. Mm. You know, it's, you know, how many undergarments do you carry, or how many, you know, socks do you take, or, you know, a brush or a comb or things like that. And you don't need it, you know. And the lighter you can go, the better your experience is going to be. I think the less you carry, the less of a burden it is.
Mm. I think the last time I asked, I think 46 people had dropped out mm-hmm. of the 330, right. which is higher than normal for that particular time, I understand. And I think probably that was down to probably the lovely weather and mm-hmm. heavy weights and boots trundling down hardcore roads.
I think that's, you know, that's what my understanding is, you know, lots of blisters and lots of things like that. You know, it's, I wear toe socks, you know, just to give my toes extra space. So, you know, they're not quite so cramped and, you know, things like that. So there's certain things that I do to make things more comfortable for myself. But, you know, it just, watch your gear. You don't need makeup. You don't need, you know, it's like I took a hairbrush as my luxury item, and then we cut the handle off. So it cut down on the weight, you know, so it's just like, you don't need it. And it's like, if you smell like everybody smells, it's okay.
You pop the team.
You know, you air out as you walk along, and, you know, it's just that. I think the sad part is if you don't try, you know, it's like, oh, you have this one wonderful opportunity, but, you know, I think not giving it a go is, it's sad. I'm like, you miss out on great opportunities.
But the TGO has a remarkable record of really strong solo women. Mm. I mean, I mean, this year is no different, and we've become friends, Facebook friends and in-face friends with a lot of them. But, you know, Lindsay and Laura and Louise and Emma and Norma, you know, and you can fill in all the last names. But I mean, these are incredibly strong women, some solo, some, you know, with partners, but could easily do it by themselves, that have, you know, no issues walking alone, no issues camping alone. I mean, they just crush it at, you know, and we've seen them every year. So it's a really, really good legacy for women. I mean, we have some of those in the U.S. too, you know, Liz Thomas and Renee Dufault and Felicia Hermosillo. And, you know, there's a lot of them in the community, but, you know, I mean, it's the same here. I mean, there's a really, really, really big group of strong women who can hike solo, no problem. Mm.
Now, I know you're an evangelist for the lightweight movement, and looking at your equipment, obviously, that has been the case. Now, the crossings that you've done, have you had fair weather, or have you ever had really, really appalling weather, and you've had to question your choices?
I think for the whole, all of our crossings have been what I would consider pretty good weather. I mean, I think you guys would consider it to be great weather. I think one or two times in 14 it really rained on us hard, but again, we had a Cuban fiber nice shelter, withstood everything, you know, no problems whatsoever. I think once you're in a shelter, once you're out in the wilds and you survive, in quotation marks, a big storm, and you're confident with your gear, then you can sleep. You're not sitting up all night wondering if it's going to blow over. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, the last thing you'd want to do is come out on a challenge like this with new gear that you've never slept in or never tested. I think that's the biggest mistake people do, is they just rush out with things that, you know, they haven't used to be confident with. But once you're confident with it, I think at least in all the talks that I give or that I talk to people about, your weight is your fear. So if you're afraid of being cold, you pack too many clothes. Yeah, if you're afraid of being hungry, you pack too much food. And so the more experience you have, the less fear you have, and so the less you end up having to take. But again, you know, it's a different... This is a different landscape. This is a different environment. Scotland's 3,000 foot peaks act in every way like the U.S.'s 8,000 to 10,000 foot peaks, right? The weather, you know, the wetness underfoot. I mean, this is the only country I know of that the higher you go, the wetter it gets, right? So that's unique to Scotland as well. And when you say you can have four seasons in one day, you can have four seasons in one day. We've had it snow on us, sleet on us, rain on us, and sunshine, you know, all in one day. And so, you know, that can be pretty unnerving if you haven't experienced it before. So,
Okay. Well, I mean, the final question I like to ask people when they've got to this stage anyway, and you may be able to answer it, but I hope you'll give a bit of honesty, is two questions really, or one question. What has been your best piece of kit and your worst piece of kit?
My best piece of kit.
The one you're most in love with or just really appreciate having, or...
My fleece hat. I'm most appreciative of my fleece hat. I think I'm most appreciative of my fleece pullover and my fleece hat, because in Scotland you need that extra layer of fleece, of that warmth that you wouldn't probably normally take. I would take a long sleeve hiking shirt, a rain jacket, and a puffy. But I wouldn't probably take that mid layer fleece
for when you start in the morning.
Because you know you end up hiking and warming up or what have you, and you know the day is going to warm up or what have you, or you're going to wear your rain gear all day or whatever it is. But it's that extra layer because Scotland is kind of damp, right? So it's that damp cold.
And the worst?
The worst.
Something that hasn't performed as well as you think, or...
Yeah, I'm not particularly happy with the new sleeping mat I have. So it's too thin for side sleeping. Right. So, you know, I'm a side sleeper, and my hip, you know, if my hip is touching the ground, it's very uncomfortable for me to sleep. It's a climate. Yeah, it's a climate. It's insulated, so it was good on the ground, but it just quite wasn't thick enough for me. Maybe that's the weight fear that I'm going to get a bigger, thicker... sleeping mat. But to be fair, we don't sleep on the ground very much. It's uncivilized to sleep on the ground. We sleep in hammocks for 90% of our adventures. So you know, we swing the night away and, you know, in lovely slumber while everything happens underneath us. And, you know, this whole sleeping on the ground and crawling out on your knees thing is, you know, very uncivilized.
Okay. Yeah, we've kind of moved on to the next level. We have lots of trees there. So
we'll get hate mail should be sent to.
So do you have a favorite and a worst item then, Vicky?
My favorite item is my Rab wind jacket. Love that jacket and wear it all the time. It's lightweight. It's just a nice protection. So that's probably my favorite. My worst? That's a really good question. I don't know. We go so light now that it, you know... Now it's kind of like a science. I kind of know what I like. It's just like I used to wear like regular socks. Now they have to be toe socks. It has to be toe socks. I don't go anywhere without my toe socks. You know, I keep everything down to minimum.
Well, if there isn't anything, that's good to hear. But it's always interesting if somebody does have something instantly comes to mind.
You know, it's just like I'm kind of like if I find it and I like it and it's not broken, I'm not going to mess with it. You know, I'll stay with it until it doesn't function quite right. So I'm a minimalist when it comes to that. So
it's also hard to break good gear. I mean, you know, the hard part is that all these companies come out with fabulous new things every year, new colors or new, you know, technologies or new fabrics, but the stuff doesn't wear out. You know, I'm wearing the same Patagonia shirt that I've worn for a decade, you know. I am wearing, because I'm crossing in a kilt this year, which I'm just not wearing at the moment. But these are Montane trail tights, which you wore on the...
Two Moors
Way.
Right.
Right? And so I've been searching forever for a pair of men's tights that are not winter tights, because I have a nice pair of fleece tights for when it's, you know, below 20 degrees or what have you and I'm out. But I could never find a pair, and I ordered these, and they're brilliant.
So, excellent. Thanks. So you said crossing in a kilt. Is that the hiker kilt?
Actually, it's a kilt that was, and she'll love it, Mandy Bland at Purple Rain Adventure Skirts in Oregon. She makes hiking skirts and kilts, and she made a specific one for me of a tartan using a very lightweight polyester stretch fabric.
Okay, so, okay. Yeah. And so the next question that immediately people will leap to is, how did you find the ticks this year? Because there's been a certain explosion of ticks.
I haven't.
I've been bitten all over my legs by ticks.
Have you really? Yeah, no, yeah. I haven't seen one yet this year, so I'm very fortunate.
That's why I wear tights all the time to try to avoid it. So I haven't run across any on myself either. Yeah. But I do wear tights. Mm. I mean, that's
a real Scotsman may go across commando under their kilt, but Americans don't. So. Mm.
That brings us to the end of part 6. My thanks to Craig and Vicky, and I hope our conversation gives confidence to anyone overseas who is interested in taking part in future challenges. The details for each challenge event is released in the October issue of TGO magazine. Join us next time for more interviews and the concluding episode from the 2008 TGO Challenge. Until then, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.